This is a public service from the Vancouver Media Co-op.
Hello. Hi. How are you? We're the warm-up act for Veda Hilly. So be kind to us. I want to start by thanking the Tsleil-Waututh Nation for letting us use their land and have our presence here. I'm moderating this conversation with Naomi and Art. I want to confess my conflict of interest that I'm married to one of the panelists. Art and I have been together for a long time. This is going to be a very tough panel, very hard-hitting series of confrontational encounters, as you can imagine. It's an honor to be here at the searing twilight of Under the Volcano. Naomi and I have been trying to get here for about a decade, and we have managed at the very last minute. And we're delighted to be in this incredible space that you have created of reflection and celebration and unrepentant radicalism. Do I get like an oh yeah or anything? Thank you. If at some point in the next 40 minutes you could all leap to your feet and do this for us like you did for Olmeca, that would be fine. All right, maybe not. It's not a tough crowd, it's a Vancouver crowd. Did I say that out loud? Oh, ouch. We're having this conversation, I think, at a pivotal moment in Canadian activism. It's been the biggest year in a generation, starting with the Olympics and moving through the G20. There have been a lot of fierce debates in the activist world. There have been some interesting new alliances. There's been a lot of energy. There's been surprising persistence and radicalism on the streets of our country. And from different perspectives, that's some of what we want to explore here today. So given that we're going to start with the big picture, let's take a little snapshot of where you think we're at in the world of organizing, Naomi. It's been a big year. Where do you think we sit?
Well, first I just want to say how happy I am to be here with all of you. And I'm sorry it took so long, but I'm so glad to be here. And I want to thank the organizers, not just for everything they've done this year, but everything they've done every year to create this space. And we need more spaces like this. We need more spaces that bring together art and politics, and really radical politics, really radical art. And we don't have enough of them. So one space is closing, more spaces have to open up. So let us all see this final Under the Volcano as a challenge to create new radical spaces that bring together art and culture in all of our communities.
More volcanoes.
I think a really incredible year for Canadian activism. Avi and I are from Toronto. We watched the mobilizations here in Vancouver against the Olympics on stolen land with a great deal of pride for our comrades who were in the streets and screwed up that photo op. Well done. And Arthur is going to talk more about that because he was directly involved in those mobilizations. And I just want to say what an honor it is to share the platform with Arthur Manuel, who is really, I think, one of the most innovative thinkers in this country and really a unique figure in terms of his ability to combine radical activism, direct action, defense of the land with very creative new intellectual framings, finding new levers with which to exert power against the Canadian state. And Arthur is going to talk about some of his recent ideas. But Arthur, my favorite thing that Arthur ever did was he intervened in a Canada-U.S. trade dispute over softwood lumber on the side of the United States. arguing that Canada was unfairly subsidizing its logging industry by failing to pay the First Nations people whose land the trees were on. So Arthur is an amazing thinker, and I'm really looking forward to hearing his latest ideas. I was talking earlier with Harsha Walia from No It Is Illegal about ways that we can understand what 2010 organizing means. And one of the things that I think happened this year is that Canadian activists grew their spine back. There was an amazing amount of radicalism. And what was most exciting about the G20 mobilization to me was not that there were thousands of people in the streets in the official demonstrations, but that even after the brutal police crackdown and a huge roundup, arrests of hundreds and hundreds of people, the biggest arrests since Clockwood Sound, people went back into the streets and refused to be intimidated. You know, I was at a jail solidarity demonstration a few days after the big scoop of hundreds of activists. And what was fantastic is there were all these young people there who had themselves been arrested and were still traumatized by what they had experienced in the jails, but were not staying home. And these intimidation tactics weren't working. So to me, I the reason why I say we grew our spine back is because I don't think we've seen this level of militancy on this scale since 2001, when there were huge demonstrations in Quebec City against the Free Trade Area of the Americas, and that was part of a wave of demonstrations, the so-called anti-globalization movement, which was actually an anti-capitalist movement. And after the September 11th attacks, a lot of people got scared, a lot of people got spooked, didn't want to be part of demonstrations where there would be direct action. And there has been a process of careful rebuilding and also learning the lessons of the failures of those mass mobilizations, the fact that they weren't sufficiently rooted in local struggles. And all of that hard work, I think, really paid off this year in some of these big mobilizations, like against the Olympics and against the G20. The other big breakthrough this year, I think, has to be said, is the fact that the world found out about the tar sands. This is an Indigenous-led campaign. Canada was rightfully shamed around the world in Copenhagen and ever since. So there have been a lot of breakthroughs, and I think we have a reason to be proud, to be surprised by what we're capable of. But we certainly can't be complacent, because these are really tough times. And what that G20 meeting was about passing on the bill for the economic crisis created by the richest people in our societies, the elites of the elites who gambled too hard and got too greedy, and they're already pretty damn greedy, and they got bailed out to the tune of trillions of dollars, and now there are these huge public deficits, and they want regular people to pay the cost of their bailout. And that's what they decided at the G20 summit. They decided to pass on the bill for the bankers' crisis to homeless people, to students, to pensioners. And there has to be a massive pushback. So yeah, there was a great mobilization, and people fought the cops and they fought the intimidation, but this is only the beginning. And the billion-dollar budget that the police gave themselves to secure the G8 and the G20 summits was actually just an excuse to buy themselves a whole bunch of new weapons that they will use to enforce this new wave of austerity measures that the G20 prescribed. I mean, in their final communique, they decided that all G20 governments should cut their deficits in half by 2013, which is an absolutely brutal cut. And people will fight back, and they will find themselves face to face with these weapons, these newly purchased weapons. So we've got a lot of fights on our hands. And but I think we have reason to believe that we can win some of these fights, and I know we're going to come back to those.
Well, I asked for a big picture, and we got a pretty big picture. Art, how was your 2010 on the streets of this province?
First of all, I'd like to thank all the people who showed up here in Vancouver when we had the march against the 2010 Winter Olympics. I think it was a great demonstration, great solidarity between Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people to march together and to shout the slogan, "No Olympics on stolen Indigenous land." I think it was a very significant march in that sense. But when I mentioned this a bit to Naomi, and we were talking about what we should do next, when we were talking, she sort of said that we need to get beyond the slogan of "No Olympics on stolen land" or "No Olympics on stolen native land," because we have some real serious problems in British Columbia. We have the Fish Lake, proposed Fish Lake mine up near Williams Lake, the Taseko mines. You know, that's a very serious problem. But the people up there are very concerned that this mining company wants to take a lake, a huge, huge lake, larger than this park, and they want to drain it and put it into another lake and call it Prosperity Lake. And then they want to mine under the original place where they took the water from. So talk about crazy, you know. And the Chilcotin people are probably going to wind up having to, like in KI in Ontario, probably may have to go to jail. And in order to protect their territory up there. And they do need people to be able to stand behind them, because this is Chilcotin territory. And you know, if you support the concept of honesty and integrity, and you oppose the government policy of not recognizing, you know, Aboriginal title, something that the courts have recognized, something that your Canadian Constitution in 1982 said it protected. You know, if you want to stand up behind that integrity, and like we did during the 2010 Winter Olympics, you know, the Taseko mines and the Fish Lake issue is a very serious issue that we need to address. The other one is the Enbridge pipeline from the tar sands to Prince Rupert. I know the Indigenous people up there oppose the building of that pipeline because of the possibility of damage to the environment. And they're going to need support across this country in terms of stopping that, because the tar sands is dirty oil. It's something that should be stopped, you know, because of the damage and destruction that's causing for all of us here. So that's the kind of situation that I think. And I think we need to look at it. And I've seen the same kind of solidarity happen in Toronto when we opposed the G8-G20, and we had the Indigenous Day of Action, and we had a march for 11:30 to about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We had a lot of non-Native people walking with Indigenous people. And I think that's the kind of message that we need to send to the Canadian government. The kind of message that we need to send to the provincial government is that Indigenous people, non-Indigenous people, are going to stand together and create the kind of revolution, the kind of change that is needed in order to show that we're mature, that Indigenous people, non-Indigenous people can get along at the community and in the grassroots level with them.
You've sketched a couple of important battles that are coming up in this province, and it's, if people are looking for a what next, I think that's regionally, locally, that's a tremendous direction. But a lot of activist energy in the past year, and it started in the Olympics and it carried on in the G20, has gone into debates within movements about diversity of tactics. And I think it's sort of the elephant in the room to me. And I know a lot of people here have spent a lot of time and a lot of energy and passion discussing it. And I think we need to talk about not just the debate itself, but how much energy is going into that debate when there are really serious fights to have. Naomi, you got in some shit recently for a speech that you gave in front of the police headquarters in Toronto. And there were some very selected edits of that speech that I watched on online, which were interesting. They didn't correspond to the recorded event itself. But apart from creative editing, you did get in trouble for telling the cops to do their job, which many people see as...
it was a poor choice of words.
What?
We want the police to be out of a job. We don't want them to do their job.
What do you make of this debate that's been going on since the Black Bloc actions and the resulting crackdown and the whole discussion about who outwitted whom and who infiltrated whom and what the diversity of tactics debate did in the G20 moment?
Well, who's bored of the diversity of tactics debate? Anyone? Anyone bored? Not that bored?
People are gripped by it. Look at that. There were three people who didn't want to talk about it.
Stir it up a little bit.
I think we need to talk about the principles with which we organize, under which we organize, in lots of ways, well beyond the diversity of tactics debate. I think the diversity of tactics debate speaks to an issue of whether we treat each other with respect, whether we have genuine respect for diversity. But I think it should be broader than just, what's your stand on broken windows? I feel like that is a very, very narrow way to talk about the principles and how we treat each other and what kind of communities we build. And are we building communities that that people want to join and that we want to be part of, not just for a couple of years, in our 20s, but for our entire lives, that we can live in and not just visit. So I think that it is important to talk about strategy in that context. I don't mean to belittle it. But I do feel in some ways that we've been having the exact same discussion now for a decade, and in some ways it feels like it isn't evolving enough. But I also feel like a lot of people feel that way, and I was actually impressed around the G20 mobilization that despite the fact that there was some tension on this issue, that after the police just went on their rampage, people really pulled together and put the sort of vilifying aside for the most part, with some few exceptions, accepted that there were differences, but that we had much more in common, and organized demonstrations. The one where I spoke outside the cop shop in Toronto, that was a demonstration which was to calling for the release of all the prisoners, not just the ones who we approve of. It was for everybody, and I agreed to those principles absolutely, and so did all of the other speakers. I think there is, as activists, we always have to be strategic. And I have no love for plate glass, right? I mean, this is not one of my passions.
You don't throw your body in front of it when you see it imperiled?
Exactly. No, I don't. But I do, what concerned me at the time is that I think that the onus is on us always as activists to be as strategic as we possibly can. And I don't think that there is one tactic that fits in every situation. I don't believe anyone here believes that there's only one way to demonstrate and you have to do it at every single demonstration. We think about the tactics that fit the particular circumstances. That's the way you're a smart activist. And I think it's just as stupid to think you have to break a window at every demonstration as it is to think that you have to say, hey, hey, ho, ho, whatever's got to go at every single demonstration. I mean, this doesn't...
How about never again for that one?
Speak to a profound lack of imagination. But the situation in Toronto, what was interesting, because in the lead up to the summit, we were having a really important national conversation about the outrageous spending on security, the fact that the police had just given themselves this billion-dollar present. And the Canadian public was against the police. I mean, there was a poll that was done ahead of the summit that found that 75% of Canadians believed that the price tag for security was much too high. They had failed in their efforts to vilify the activist community, to justify this huge expense. What I was talking about was the fact that the police were playing public relations during the demonstration. And we know, because people were listening to the police scanners, that the police had orders to stand down during that demonstration. This is absolutely a fact. That they sort of demobilized and kind of let it go wild. And while they were doing this, they were sending statements to media. Avi, maybe you can talk about this a little bit. What you got?
Well, Al Jazeera asked for comment.
Avi works at Al Jazeera English.
Right in the middle of the G20 weekend, for why the police didn't seem to be so absent when they'd spent so much money bringing in people from all over the country. Why they seemed to be missing in action on the streets at some critical periods. And the police statement was extraordinary. They said, look at the cop cars burning on the streets. This is why we needed this extraordinary budget. So they, right in the middle of the events, the police were using the property damage very, very politically, in a very inappropriate way for what prides itself on being a professional police force, to play politics with the moment and point at the flames to justify the money. So that was a very clear position from the security establishment in that moment.
But I mean, I have to say that my concern at the time was that the media reaction was so insane and so over the top in terms of this media panic at seeing cop cars burning in Toronto, that the ground that we'd won in the lead up to the G20 in terms of turning public opinion against the police and really talking about what this was all about, what they were going to use these weapons for and on whom, that we were losing that ground. But I have to say that I was wrong, and that the activist community in Toronto, a lot of people in Vancouver were involved, did an incredible job of keeping the discussion on the police actions. And after that initial hysteria wore off, the discussion we're having is about the civil liberties violations in Toronto, the way people were abused and traumatized in jail. And there's going to be court cases, there's going to be inquiries. So we haven't lost this. And I think the jury's out, you know, on how this whole thing played out. I think people have a right to be very, very angry at the G20 and the G8, and I don't think it's our job to police that anger and make it look pretty and make it go away. I think we need to see that anger. You know, when we see that anger in the streets of Athens, we know people in Greece are pissed off that they're having to pay the price of this crisis. And I think that we need to send messages in different ways, that Canadians are very pissed off about this. And we shouldn't be afraid of that.
This has been a public service from the Vancouver Media Co-op. Check us out online at vancouver.mediacoop.ca.